Monsters, written by Cabeza de Perro and read by Corey Cathonia. Rated for general audiences and no archive warnings apply. For the fandom of Star Wars the Prequel Trilogy, featuring the relationship of Jango Fett / Obi-Wan Kenobi. With the additional tags of Alternate Universe, Magical Realism, Pre-Relationship, Unresolved Tension, Ambiguous / Open Ending, Inspired by Art, and Inspired by Things from the Flood. Written and recorded for Pod Together 2024. Obi-Wan hides a yawn in the inside of his elbow. There's a woman with her child sitting in a bench a few places in front of him, the girl's head in her mother's lap, her bright yellow rain boots almost incongruously cheery in the dim grayness of the fairy's belly. The fog's gray fingers seem to pull at the joints between the old windows, to slide under badly fitted doors. Everything stinks of brine and rotting algae. Obi-Wan grabs his bag from under his seat and slides out of his bench, the thick fabric of his coat against the cracked linoleum catching in. He fishes his gloves and his hat from his coat pockets before stepping outside. The last thing Obi-Wan sees before closing the door at his back is the woman's tired face, looking at him over her shoulder with curiosity's exhausted cousin looking from her eyes. The flooring is cracked and almost rotten in places, slick with the damp. Obi-Wan carefully makes his way to starboard and looks outside. The fog looks back. Here and there blink green and red and blue lights, the buoys that mark the path, the central's antenna, the town port, the mining pit docks. Sound travels weirdly, the salt water and the fog and the late evening light seeming to play round with distance and depth. The knocking of the waves against the ferry's hull is weirdly hollow, and the noise of the engine seems to travel from very far away, from the other side of the world. Obi-Wan feels like the last man on Earth. He closes his eyes and reaches out. Deep under his feet, 1,000 creatures live their creature lives, killing and dying, feeding off each other and feeding their children. The woman at his back is tired and bored. Her love for her child is bright as a star. The girl feels safe. She dreams of winter, of chimes and sweets. The Force chimes like a bell, sure and clear and high, and Obi-Wan feels it within his chest. The barge hits the pneumatics that line the dock with a splash. Obi-Wan opens his eyes and starts making his way to the stern, the deck swaying slightly under his feet. He moves with the swells and dips, his bag moving with him, his lightsaber hitting his thigh where it hangs from his belt around his waist. The ferry station is empty and as run down and damp as the ferry itself. The vending machine at the back keeps cycling through the same short jingle, the tinny melody staticky and hoarse, and the single ticket counter is unmanned. There's a taped over hole in the domed glass ceiling. Obi-Wan stops right under it and looks up. Its edges are blackened, and thick cracks flow from the original to reach the concrete walls. It looks old, the blue tarp used to better cover the hole, ragged at the edges. Obi-Wan presses his lips and looks away, reconsiders. He closes his eyes again, and this time he allows himself to go deeper and further away. Rushing water, a metallic clinking noise, wind on grass, and a faraway humming. Obi-Wan first heard about the town 5 years ago. He was just passing through, following a different lead. He planned to return after finishing that job, but then the job almost finished him instead. The mining town should be too new for stories. Too new for tales of death and catastrophe. A monster or a curse or something in between. Obi-Wan's in the business of monster killing and truth-finding. If there's something to find, he will. And if there's something to kill, well, he will do that too. He finds the town's single pub easily. It's bright in a way most other things in the town just aren't. Obi-Wan follows the echoes of conversation, of song and laughter, and finds himself in front of a small wooden door at the end of one of the town's crooked alleys. The whole place was built decades ago by the mining company out of prefab kits and cheap concrete. The area closest to the shore is empty and full of seawater, but the older city center thrives. Obi-Wan steps inside and breathes in deep, the smell of hot, greasy food hitting him in the face. He closes the door to his back and takes off his hat, his gloves. It's hot inside, but he doesn't open his heavy coat. The woman behind the counter turns to look at him, suspicious, but not unkind. She's closer to 60 than to 50, with short gray hair. Obi-Wan buys himself a drink and a meal, and takes a seat at the end of the bar to eat in peace. The quiet noise of conversation, of cutlery clinking against porcelain, and of the old beat-up TV in the corner, a comfortable background. The woman sees the lightsaber the moment he takes off his coat. In his years as a Jedi, Obi-Wan's found that most people react to Jedi in two distinct ways: fear or awe. She's scared of him. When he starts asking questions, she has answers for him. The farm is at the edge of town, one of many. The mining pit is on the other side of town, closer to the shore. Fett's land is closer to the woods, the marshes encroaching from the other side. Fett raises cattle, goats, sheep. Obi-Wan doesn't know much about farming or farm animals, but he can sense their quiet satisfaction. The place is small but well kept. The row of windows on the southern wall of the main house, the one that faces the marshes, have been recently painted in a cheerful yellow color that clashes against the black mud and the fog, and the gray marsh grass. He can still hear the waves crashing against the black pebbles of the beach, the faraway humming of the mining pit's machines. The door in the gate that circles the property is unlocked. Obi-Wan pushes the cool, slick metal with bare fingers and lets it close with a click at his back, and then starts making his way up the path, the mud sucking at his boots. The door of the main house opens when he's halfway there. A man appears on the threshold, his blue sweater bluer in the low blue light of dusk. Obi-Wan pauses, smiles. "I am looking for Jango Fett," he says, raising his voice. The man steps on the top of the three-step ladder.
"Who's looking for him?" he asks.
Obi-Wan can sense very little from him. He feels cold and distant. He's unarmed and he folds his arms, as if to ward off the cold. "My name's Obi-Wan Kenobi," Obi-Wan answers. The stranger, Fett, tilts his head. For a long beat, he just looks at Obi-Wan in perfect silence. He's middle-aged,
short but strong, with unreadable dark eyes. Obi-Wan shifts his weight and breathes out. He's beginning to really feel the cold. He's been traveling for days, cutting through rain and fog and snow. The man jerks his head in a nod and steps back inside the house. He leaves the door open. Obi-Wan follows. It is said that the pits preceded the town. The town grew around and on top of the pits, and Obi-Wan has a feeling that it will survive them. The first inhabitants of this quiet and foggy stretch of coast were the miners, and the first three generations of miners and their families lived in the cheap, concrete prefab homes the mining transported from the mainland and built right next to the pits. It's a very familiar story. Obi-Wan's heard versions of it so many times he's lost count. Industry and man, and cold, hard credits, changing the face of the world irreversibly. He's also very familiar with all the ways the story is never quite as simple and straightforward as it is told. The pits preceded the town. That is true. But something was there before the company started sending out its scientists and researchers, before the first plans were ever drawn. There are kids' toys all over the house, but Obi-Wan can't see any children. He takes off his coat and his hat and his gloves, takes off his boots. He leaves it all by the now closed door, the man's eyes on him. Obi-Wan keeps reaching out to him and finding little, a mirror, always shifting. He follows the man into the kitchen. There's a TV and a radio there, both of them as old and beat up as the rest of the house. The TV's on, an old black and white movie playing silently on the screen. There's a heavy iron pot on the cold stove, a small pile of vegetables on the counter next to it. "Apologies, I didn't mean to intrude," Obi-Wan says. He pauses next to the kitchen table. Four chairs, but he has a feeling most of them don't see much use. The surface of the table is crowded. Old bills and pens and a heavy-duty torch, all competing for space. Somehow, it manages to feel controlled, nonetheless. The whole house is like that. A small, quiet space, full of stuff, all of it in its proper place. The man gestures at one of the chairs and then turns around. He grabs a heavy kettle from the cupboard, fills it with water, places it on the stove. "I'm fed," he says after a beat. Obi-Wan turns to look at him over his shoulder. He can see Fett's reflection in the window over the sink. He's staring right back at Obi-Wan, the shadow of his dark eyes on the fog that creeps up from the marshes. Fett looks away to open a different cupboard. He takes out two mugs, places them on the counter with a careful click. "What do you want from me?" Obi-Wan smiles. "I am hunting down a story," he says. "I was told you are the man to ask." Fett snorts. He turns and leans his back against the counter, crossing his arms. He's barefoot, the edges of his work pants ragged. The rolled-up sleeves of his shirt reveal strong forearms. Pale scars cut through the tattoos there. Obi-Wan glances at them and away. In all his travels, he's never seen the like.
I don't know about stories, Fett replies. I'm not much of a storyteller.
He looks and talks like a farmer, but there's something about him, about the way he holds himself and the intensity in his gaze. The kettle starts whistling, and Fett turns around to remove it from the stove. Obi-Wan takes a seat in one of the chairs and waits while Fett finishes preparing the tea, something almost ritualistic about the way he goes about it. He measures the tea leaves, pours the hot water in the small porcelain pot. He places pot and mugs on the table before joining Obi-Wan. The tea smells fresh and sweet. Obi-Wan breathes it in, his eyes closing without his input. It's too hot to drink, but its warmth seeps into his cold hands, loosens something cold lodged in his chest. Fett watches him in silence, his attention a heavy, restrained creature. Obi-Wan sighs and opens his eyes again. I was led to believe that your family has lived in this land longer than anyone else's, Obi-Wan says. Fett nods in agreement and keeps quiet. After a beat, Obi-Wan keeps talking. The silence between them is the kind that begs to be filled. Apologies if I was wrong. Fett sighs.
You're not, he admits.
He smiles.
There has been a Fett here since the beginning.
Crashing waves, the wind on the marsh grasses, rain hitting still water. Obi-Wan blinks, blinks, blinks. He takes a sip of tea to wash the taste of peat off his mouth and burns his tongue.
We have never been the kind to tell stories, Fett says. Sorry to disappoint.
There's something about his eyes, about the way his eyes fall on Obi-Wan.
They are too old. He sees too much.
At first, they called it a curse. It took down tunnels, took the miners' lives. Bad luck beating to the beat of the mine's mechanical heart, doing very little to interrupt the flow of Tabana and worse into the sea and into the marshes. But curses don't bleed. The storm arrives unannounced, and all at once. Obi-Wan first feels it on the back of his head, right over his neck. The pressure builds and builds and builds, and then thunder crashes down on the farm, and wind rattles the windows, and the lamps in the small warm kitchen flicker once, twice, before dying. Fett curses under his breath. It's not personal. Obi-Wan says nothing while he stands up, cup of tea abandoned on the table, and approaches the only window in the kitchen. Rainwater streams down the glass, smearing the foggy world outside. Obi-Wan stands up as well. He's not looking forward to the long, cold, wet walk back to the town. He has nowhere to stay. But he will make do, because he always has. The noise of the chair legs against the floorboards catches Fett's attention, and he turns to look at Obi-Wan. Understanding dawns on his face. I can let myself... Obi-Wan starts. Fett shakes his head.
Don't be stupid, he says.
He turns back to the window. He's unhappy. He doesn't want Obi-Wan in his home.
You will stay the night.
Obi-Wan frowns. That's not really necessary.
Fett snorts. He starts making his way out of the kitchen, barefoot, quiet on the wooden floorboards.
Help me with the goats, he tells Obi-Wan.
He smirks at him over his shoulder, the gesture surprising in its warmth.
Obi-Wan feels himself blink.
Consider that your payment. Obi-Wan scrunches up his nose. The Force is in all living creatures, goats included. He is of the opinion, however, that some living creatures are closer to the dark side than others.
Like goats.
He says nothing and follows Fett outside. The air tastes of brine and wet grass and wetter animal. The fog licks the inside of the fence. Pale lightning crosses the sky in paths of fire. Thunder crashes, and Obi-Wan blinks water out of his eyes, trips in the mud after Fett. Obi-Wan's been a Jedi for decades. He's traveled all over the continent. He's talked to hundreds, thousands of people. He's seen wonders, and he's seen the depths of the human soul. That night, under the rain and in the fog, water in his eyes and in his nose, mud climbing into his boots and up his trouser legs, fingers numb and toes number, the goat scared and cold and tired and making it all his problem, will never leave his mind. By the time Obi-Wan follows Fett back inside, he's drenched to the bone, and their tea is dead cold. They drip rainwater all the way through the kitchen and into the farmhouse's main living space. It's a wide room, darkness stuck to the corners, a spitting fire burning in the chimney. They take off their sodden clothes in front of the fire, and then Obi-Wan helps Fett drag two chairs from the kitchen, and they hang their dripping coats to dry. Fett eyes the lightsaber when Obi-Wan leaves it on one of the chairs, but says nothing. Obi-Wan wonders if he even knows what it is. He throws one of the blankets at Obi-Wan and then lets himself drop with a grunt on the ground in front of the fire, his own thrown over his bare shoulders. His torso is as scarred as his forearms. Blaster shots, long-heeled cuts, burns. He's a puzzle of a man. Obi-Wan looks away and joins Fett on the cool stone floors, the heavy wool blanket scratchy but comforting against his bare skin. For a beat, they sit in silence, just broken by the crackling of the fire, by the noise of the rain hitting the windows and the roof. Obi-Wan picks at the drying mud on his feet and closes his eyes, thinking of nothing. Last few weeks, months, of non-stop traveling catching up with him. He hurts to the bone, old wounds and old breaks, almost 2 decades of scars. He carries his memories in his body, very much like Fett.
I wasn't told you had a son, Obi-Wan says after a while.
Fett blinks and turns to look at him. The dancing flames paint deeper shadows on his tired face. After a beat, he looks away.
He's at a friend's, he says. He'll spend the night there.
Silence descends once again over the room. Fett exhales. He stands up, blanket held snugly around his shoulders. Obi-Wan looks up at him in question.
You can sleep here, he says, jerking his head at the rest of the room.
Obi-Wan nods. It's dry and warm, and there's a comfortable-looking sofa. He could do worse.
Has done worse. The bathroom's at the end of the hallway. Feel free to use it. Thank you, Obi-Wan says awkwardly. That's very kind.
Fett stares at him for a long minute, face unreadable. He grunts in reply and starts walking away. Obi-Wan looks at him over his shoulder, at his muddy bare legs, at his broad shoulders under the blanket, at his damp, dark curls. Thunder crashes, making the whole house rattle. Obi-Wan sighs and turns back to the fire. Curses don't bleed, but men do. Whatever it is comes with the fog and leaves with it. It bleeds red, but doesn't die. It is capable of terrible and terribly careful violence. The mining company has been trying to find it and kill it for half a century. And at first they brought hunters and military men from the mainland, poured thousands of credits into the kind of security only money can buy. The miners and the townies fear it, but that means very little. Obi-Wan has been trained to find and kill monsters. In the last 20 years, he's found that killing them is the easy part. The house is quiet by the time Obi-Wan slips out from the small bathroom. He's warm and clean, the warmest and cleanest he's felt in weeks, even if his clothes are still damp, even if they still stink of old sweat and swamp water. The house creaks and sways all around him, and the wooden floorboards are cool under his bare feet. Obi-Wan closes his eyes and reaches out with his mind. Fett sleeps, the surface of his mind like a liquid mirror. Something tugs him down the corridor and in the opposite direction of the main room, with his blanket and the old but comfortable couch, and Obi-Wan follows it. It's stopped raining, but the wind blows against the farmhouse, makes it rattle. He finds the armor in the cellar. The door is unlocked, and it swings open when Obi-Wan pushes it with his hand, turning silently on well-oiled hinges. The cellar is a big, tidy space, with shelving units against the rock walls and damp concrete flooring. The armor sits on a rack at the end, and when Obi-Wan switches on the lights, the silver metal shines. It's an old, alien thing. History clings to it like honey to skin. And when Obi-Wan finds his own reflection in the dark T-shaped visor, he finds he has to look away. Obi-Wan wakes up with the dawn. He shares a cup of tea with Fett in the kitchen, and then he gets dressed, grabs his coat and his saber, and steps outside. The fog is gone, and the world smells green and new. He was trained to find and kill monsters, to hunt them down, to turn rumors into flesh and blood and bone. Killing monsters is easy. Finding them is the hard part. The end.